It is me, George G. We've got another awesome episode of the Aligned Money Show coming your way featuring Kimberly Flynn. She is a CFA, the president of XA Investments. They're focused on alternative investments and interval funds. We had an awesome conversation that, of course, started with two truths and a lie. We talked about the current trend of companies remaining public as opposed to going private, what that means for investors, and how investment companies are starting to build and develop new products that will allow retail investors, just regular investors like you and I, to get access to private equity type investments in a way that can benefit us for our retirement and hit all of our financial goals. We talked about the challenges and opportunities of creating products like that and how to distribute them and really fundamentally how it benefits the end user, which is, of course, the investor. So I know that you're going to love it. Let's go. Kim, to get us started, give me two truths and a lie, please.
Sure. Well, so I, in a former life, I played violin. I was also a lacrosse goalie in high school and spent a lot of time out in Park City snow skiing.
Excellent. Okay. You played violin. You were a lacrosse goalie and Park City skiing. Excellent additional details, like not just lacrosse, but you were the goalie and not just skiing, but Park City. So violin, there's only one piece of information there for me. Let's see here, Kim. These are tough because you just told me where you grew up. And so I'm trying to figure out.
Oh, I did.
I don't think that you were a lacrosse goalie, Kim.
You got it. I've got it. You're good. I've got two kids who are lacrosse goalies. But lacrosse is not very common in Oklahoma. You know, even in the Midwest, it's still not as popular as soccer. That's for sure.
Is there a lot of snow skiing in Oklahoma?
No, no. My dad that's his favorite thing to do. So I grew up going to Copper Mountain in Colorado, and then we later discovered Park City. So,
all right.
Yeah.
Tell me about the violin. Are you still playing?
You know, my daughter picked up the violin and then switched to cello. So when she was learning, I would play with her, but she got to the point where she was past where I stopped, but I played actually picked the violin back up in college and played just for relaxation, for fun. So I enjoy it. I'm involved with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra because I know and appreciate how hard it is to be that good at a musical instrument.
No question about it. I have ultimate respect for anybody that rises to that level. So awesome. Well, beautiful. Well, thanks for playing with me. What's top of mind for you right now?
Well, my days are spent helping alternative asset managers figure out how to get access to the growing retail marketplace. And the reason this is sort of top of mind for alternative asset managers is, you know, there's a lot of talk about private markets. Companies are staying private longer. And so there's now been innovations that let individual investors have the opportunity to buy private equity, to buy venture capital, infrastructure, private credit. And so that's what's top of mind for us. And we work across private market strategies. And if you're dealing with illiquid or less liquid assets, there's some complexities in terms of valuation, in terms of product structuring. And that's a big focus of our business.
How does one get into this field, Kim?
I've spent the last 25 years of my career in asset management, specifically focused on capital markets, fundraising, and creating what we think are innovative products. So I worked at Nuveen Investments. Nuveen is now part of TI Cref. And I spent 12 years there as ultimately my last job was head of product development. But Nuveen is well known for municipal bonds, and as they diversified their business, they moved into a bunch of other asset classes. So for me, it was an opportunity to explore the risks, the returns, the benefits of going into those different types of Nuveen was very focused on income-oriented investments, things like preferred securities, high yield, senior loans. And so I became a student of learning different asset classes. And now I've been able to take that learning in the business that I run. And now we focus primarily on private market strategies.
Excellent. Now, I don't know if it's obvious, is it an increasing trend that we're seeing companies remain public as opposed to going, or rather remaining private as opposed to going public?
Well, I think that there have been cycles in the past. So I think if you're a student of history, you'd look back and say there have been moments in times where the capital markets close. And so we've been in a 3-year window. 2021 was a record-breaking IPO year for US public companies. But the subsequent years, there have been much fewer IPOs. And private equity investors, they are looking to an IPO often for an exit. They might buy a company and hold on to it for 5 or 6 years. The time windows are extending because to sell the company, they are either looking for a strategic buyer, another company, maybe another private equity shop that's going to buy them out. So yes, right now we're seeing, and that's part of the reason why we're seeing things like continuation funds, because these funds are having to extend their timetables, because it may not be the optimal time, to realize the company's full potential. But, I think in popular news, we hear a lot about SpaceX and some of these other private unicorns, and people want access to growing companies like that, especially some of these tech and AI businesses that remain private. And so that's what I think is driving some of this thirst for private market access.
Well, that certainly makes sense. So the opportunity is, okay, how do we create new products that allow retail investors to gain access to this space, which is normally reserved for more sophisticated investors?
Yeah, that's right. So in the past, you could buy private equity, but you needed to meet a suitability requirement and have, X millions of dollars. And then you'd be illiquid. You'd need to invest for a period of 10 or more years. So that's why I think with private equity and real estate, to make it more accessible, you have to make it easier for investors and easier for financial advisors who are trying to rebalance public and private investments. The private market exposure, and if you invest in real estate or farmland, I think listeners will understand, to maximize your home sale price, you can't just sell it tomorrow. You need to get an agent. You need to take 60 days to sell it at the highest price the market will bear. The same is true for some of these private equity or infrastructure assets. So it has to be patient capital. And so therefore, it's only appropriate for probably a small part of most people's overall portfolio. But then again, most people are saving for a goal that's in the distant future. Maybe it's a retirement goal. Maybe you want to buy a second home. Unless you're doing that tomorrow, you can tolerate some illiquid investments. The goal is to drive higher returns and potentially lower risk because these assets are going to behave differently. They're going to move in different directions, as your public equity securities.
So it's your job to figure out how to make this happen.
Yeah, to try to make it easier, right? And the industry, like if you think about the retirement industry, it's built for mutual funds. It's been adapted for exchange traded funds. But these products are different. And the how you buy them, how you get in is different, how you get out is different. And so the whole ecosystem sort of is evolving as it is being built out. But the reason we're talking about it today is there's all these leading alternative investment firms, which are now becoming more common knowledge, like Blackstone. Everyone knows who Blackstone is. Many people know who Apollo or Ares or KKR. Those firms are spending a lot of dollars on education. So we're going to be hearing more from these big firms. But there's a ton of alternative investment boutiques, because frankly, a lot of these alternative strategies are capacity constrained. In many of the mutual fund shops, they're trillion-dollar managers. You don't find that with many of the alternative investment strategies because naturally, there's going to be a limit in terms of how much capital you can deploy.
Sure. So when you are BlackRock or whatever, State Street, and you've got the S&P 500 mutual fund inside of half of the 401ks in America, there's a lot of money inside of them versus you are your investment company, and there's access to less funds, fewer funds, but that is what the opportunity is to bring this to more people. It's probably extremely obvious to you. I'm sure that it is. Can you define or tell me a little bit about what an alternative investment boutique is for people who maybe don't know?
Yeah, I think alternative is what strikes people as like, what is that? And I think there's a wide spectrum of alternative assets, and a lot of people prefer just calling it private markets. But alternative could be on the liquid end. It could be a hedge fund strategy. It could be a commodity strategy. It could be crypto. On the less liquid end, it's things like infrastructure, farmland, maybe direct lending, which is a private credit strategy. So there's really an array of strategies across a liquidity spectrum, but it's basically something that is not a stock or a bond. So people might even include gold as a, gold is a people when they're concerned flight to safety, but it's also an alternative in to volatile public equities or fixed income. And so I think that there's been an expansion in how people think about alternatives. Even things like collectibles, art, wine, racehorses. I've seen a fuller definition, which most people don't invest in that. But if you're very wealthy, maybe you own an F1 team, or you have a big wine collection. Now, are those an appropriate store of value for most individual investors? No, but things that are able, like private equity, can be unitized so that I can buy a piece of a public, or sorry, a piece of a private company. And that's what in terms of accessibility, it's how do I get to participate in a way that's appropriately sized for my portfolio?
So you are answering my next question, which is why would an ordinary everyday investor like me participate in alternatives or consider alternatives?
Yeah, absolutely. I think in 2022, that really woke up a lot of investors, because for many years, the last 10 or 15 years, U.S. investors especially have become biased towards U.S. large cap equity, right? And at the expense of diversification, because we're no longer buying emerging market debt or international equities, and partly because the returns have been so fantastic in U.S. large cap equity, especially things like the Mag 7 or the FAANG stocks before that. So portfolios became fairly overweight those types of exposures. And in 2022, neither public equity nor fixed income worked. Both had negative returns. So I think it gave, frankly, wealth managers and financial advisors the opportunity to just have that conversation again about sort of the classic optimized portfolio. Now, if you're depending on your objectives, if you're saving for retirement, maybe you're more total return focused. But if you're already in retirement, maybe your goal is just, I want higher levels of income. So there's now so many different private market choices that can serve those objectives, either total return or income, that a lot of financial advisors are using private equity to substitute for public equity. Maybe they're using direct lending to reduce someone's high yield exposure. So these are not, there's no longer like a 10% alts bucket, or it's almost like you're working through your objectives and substituting private market exposure to complement whatever that goal might be. And so you're seeing the private market strategies work their way in into different parts of the portfolio than I think they used to be.
I don't know if this is an answerable question, or you can take this however you want. Where do you view the biggest opportunities? Is it trying to get people who are not currently invested at all to start investing here? Is it going to the big wirehouses, the Merrill Lynches of the world, and trying to get them to add in? Is it
Yeah.
the independent RIA financial type advisors? It's a little bit of everybody,
Well,
and what is the kind of the time horizon on those?
so the RIA that, the independent advisors have and the family offices have embraced alternative investments for many, many years. And frankly, that's where most fund sponsors go first. The reason for that, I think, is that if you look at non-listed REITs, which offer real estate, you know, exposure, non-listed BDCs, business development companies, which is typically middle market debt of U.S. companies. Those were two types of products that, you know, that have been offered over the last 20 years. So there has been education. It's just now we're seeing an explosion across a variety of different strategies, because a REIT can only hold real estate. A BDC can only hold middle market debt. And but the channel that got educated in those products were typically independent financial advisors. The wirehouse firms are adopting alternatives increasingly so, because there's a lot of demand. They had offered private funds already for ultra high net worth clients. So the difference here is not that the alternatives are new to them. It's that now alternatives are being made available for everyone, you know, and the determination of what's appropriate and the sizing would be different for a very wealthy client versus, you know, someone who's, you know, just started out saving. So we're seeing more adoption. It's slower because the platform managers are taking their time in terms of doing the diligence, evaluating the risk of the fund. So I think now there's a lot of availability. The one thing that's on the horizon is funds that are combining public and private investments. Whether that, you know, is helpful, because a lot of investors already have their public markets allocations. But I think now we're at a point where you're just seeing a bunch of different products on offer to meet the demand and the risk tolerances of a wide variety of customers. And even people who don't have any alternative exposure, people are building products that would be appropriate for a first-time alternative investor. We actually just saw Wellington make headlines. Wellington Management out of Boston made headlines. Wellington is partnered with Vanguard, which is obviously well-known for their products, their ETFs. And they've partnered with Blackstone to build a product that's public and private. So that would be suitable for a very large audience. So we're seeing sort of a wide variety, and you definitely have to look under the hood to make sure, you know, it's the investment exposure that you're comfortable with.
That's really interesting. I'm way too reductive of a thinker. So it's almost like if I were to go buy an asset allocation fund or a target date fund, sort of a set it and forget it kind of a thing, where the alternative is 10 to 15% of the portfolio, and maybe part of that is public, private.
That's exactly that you're describing the Wellington fund, because they actually call it an all asset fund. I think that target date funds have had sort of mixed success. So people don't love target date funds. So in some ways, it's kind of this is sort of a variation on that, because they've got a wide variety of assets, public and private. And with Blackstone, with Vanguard, with Wellington, they're saying we can manage this asset mix in a way that's better than maybe something that's more passively, you know, that's kind of just an amalgamation of mutual funds.
And when you say you have to look under the hood, what popped into my mind was, if I buy a gold ETF, what am I actually owning? Am I actually owning gold anywhere, or is it somehow linked to? So can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, understanding what's in the underlying portfolio. Like in the case of a gold ETF, it might be a derivative and not the gold bar, but both are on offer. And so then you have to understand, once you've understood, like, what's the asset mix, what's in the portfolio, and how much private market exposure am I getting, is it worth it? Then you look at fees, because most of these products are higher priced, as you would expect. And I don't have a problem with higher fees. I want to be clear, because many of the institutional managers, they charge institutional clients high fees, performance fees, and, you know, there's an incentive for them to perform. What I don't want to see is products that have been watered down or diluted, right? Like, if retail investors want access, they should have true institutional access. And that may come at a price. So I do, there's plenty of people that are trying to build lower price products. And while that makes good headlines, that's why I say you got to look under the hood to make sure you know what you're getting. So.
And this is where it makes sense to be working with a financial advisor that knows what they're talking about, so they can look at options and say, these are the pros and the cons of this one. These are the pros and cons of that one.
Absolutely. I mean, some advisors may say, hey, listen, you have enough in savings that you should just go directly into the private fund, you know, and they can help you with those trade-offs, right? In evaluating what's appropriate, because they've got your plan for the next 5 to 15 years. So most of these products, which are many of them are called interval funds, you can only buy them through a financial advisor. There's a few firms that are trying to do direct to consumer and make the products available. So I would say in the next 12 to 18 months, we're going to see a lot more options. But right now, firms like Robinhood or Fidelity, if you wanted to just go buy one of these products, you couldn't. You'd have to go through your financial advisor. So to the extent you do have a wealth manager, definitely talk with them. They're getting a lot of resources, a lot of opportunities put in front of them. So they'll be able to share that with their clients.
And so where do you and XA Investments fit into this world? I know that we've been talking about it, but
yeah, our business is, we have two sides of our business. One, we're just a regular fund manager. We specialize in what we call closed-end funds. This is getting into the legal definitions, but everything we do is focused on private markets. And when we go to market, we always partner with a best-in-class alternative investment manager. And so that looks like an advisor-sub-advisor relationship on the proprietary funds that I have. I've got two private credit funds and one hedged equity fund. We don't actually spend a lot of time talking about that side of our business. What people tend to call me about, want to talk about is the research and the consulting work that we do, because we're a small firm, entrepreneurial, and because we hire sub-advisors, we're in the business of talking with other asset managers. And many of the alternative firms that we've talked with, they're really excited about the opportunity to create evergreen type products, but they don't know where to start. You know, most of these alternative boutiques don't have mutual funds. They don't have ETFs. And you do need to have some of that knowledge if you're building an SEC registered type product. And so we kind of sit at that intersection of that knowledge. There's only a handful of people. So we get hired by a lot of firms who are looking to explore this and can help them in ways that they need some outside assistance. So the consulting work's a lot of fun. We get to work with a lot of different private market strategies, and it keeps my team learning, which is really important when you bring young people into a team. So
love it. Well, Kim, we're ready for that difference making tip. What do you have for us?
Well, I say that, you know, I think Americans need to be reminded that the burden for retirement, you know, is on your shoulders. It's on my shoulders. And, you know, we no longer, most of us don't have the benefit of pensions. And so, you know, it is a burden, and you can get help with that in the form of a financial advisor or a manager, but take it seriously, because I think that, you know, while many Americans will have Social Security, it's not enough to ensure the lifestyle that many Americans want to retire in. And so, pension managers, you know, for the last 100 years have been using private market strategies. They've been using real estate, private equity to achieve superior returns. They have a long investment horizon because they're planning years out. So I would encourage, you know, investors who are saving for retirement to take some of the best practices from those institutional pension fund managers. That's why it's important. You know, public equity and fixed income is not going to get you there in terms of your investment goal. And especially if you're approaching retirement and the equity market corrects by 25%, it's going to set back your retirement plans by several years. So I just want people to understand, that is an acute issue and you can do something about it, because the accumulation of wealth and compounding of returns, you know, is your friend. But you know, you face a lot of volatility in the equity market. So that's why diversification is helpful.
Well, I think that is great stuff that definitely gets it. Come on, Kim. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on. Where can people learn more about you and XA Advisors, and how can people get in touch?
Yes, well, follow me on LinkedIn, Kimberly Flynn, XA Investments, and then our website is xainvestments.com. We've got a lot of educational information there, and you can find out more about interval funds if you're curious, and you know, we can always get in touch. So thank you. Thank you, George.
Excellent. Well, if you enjoyed this much as I did, show Kim your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to xainvestments.com. Check out everything that Kim has been talking about to learn a little bit about the interval fund she just mentioned. And you can find her on LinkedIn as well. I will link all of those in the notes of the show. Thanks again, Kim.
Thanks, George.
Finally, as Kim just mentioned a minute ago, there's never going to be anybody more interested in your financial success than you are. So act accordingly.